In the opening verses of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus describes characteristics of those who will be in God's kingdom. In fact, characteristics we must have in order to be in God's kingdom. The words in those opening verses are simple, and they're familiar. In fact, familiar to the point where we might rush through those passages quickly and superficially. But the lessons and the teaching in those statements that Jesus gives in those opening verses of the Sermon on the Mount, those lessons are profound and they are life-changing. Jesus didn't give these as commands, but again, they are characteristics that will be required in order to become a part of God's kingdom. We've reviewed a couple of them fairly recently. In chapter 5, verse 3, we read of those who are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God. We found that the phrase poor in spirit refers to those who are fully aware of their own limitations and their complete dependence on God. Sometimes that phrase may refer to those who are literally poor, people who are destitute of wealth, who have no influence or position in this life. And so they are considered to be the ones that people don't pay much attention to. They're just the poor. The phrase, refers not to those who are physically poor, but to all who are acutely aware that they totally depend on God. We all need to be, in that sense, poor in spirit, recognizing that we trust God for everything. Verse 4 refers to those who mourn. Blessed are those who mourn, they shall be comforted. Mourning, we found, applies in a number of ways. First of all, it can apply to those who are deeply repentant, those who mourn their sin and come to God for forgiveness and look to Him for His grace and His mercy. It also refers to those who have suffered in physical ways but continue to persevere. They continue on with God's way of life even though they have hurt. They have dealt with serious difficulties and pain. They continue to look to God for His comfort and relief. And it also can refer to those who have empathy, who mourn for others who are suffering. We mourn for one another when our brethren endure trials. We mourn for this world. We look around, especially it seems in the last few years in particular, even more so than ever, and we see what needs to be corrected, what needs to be fixed. We see the chaos and the suffering and the pain of mankind, and we mourn for them, and we long for Jesus Christ to return. That brings us to verse 5 in Matthew 5, where Jesus said, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." The title of the sermon today is "Blessed are the meek." Who are the meek? What does it mean to be a meek person? Typically, a meek person is considered to be feeble or weak or fearful. A person who would be easily dominated, manipulated by others with stronger personalities. That's a typical view of what it would mean to most to be meek. A Mr. Milquetoast. Anybody remember Mr. Milquetoast? It's a phrase that refers to a person who has that kind of a weak personality. Casper Milquetoast was the creation of a cartoonist named H.T. Webster. And for years, he produced a comic strip that featured the main character, Casper Milquetoast. And Casper was a wimpy, timid person described as the man who speaks softly and gets hit with a big stick. A very weak and ineffective person. But is that what it means to be meek? Are we to become Casper Milquetoast? Well, according to Jesus, meekness is a characteristic that we all need to develop. So we need to understand just what it is and how it does apply in our lives. The Greek word transferred meek has a very different meaning than what we've just talked about. To be meek means to have a quality of gentleness in attitude and behavior. This is in contrast to a person who is harsh. So meekness is the opposite extreme of harshness. And there's a special blessing, again, that is offered to those who are meek. It has to do with their blessings in this life and also as part of God's kingdom. The Greek-English lexicon by Lau and Nida has this to say about meekness. In a number of languages, gentleness, which is meekness, is often expressed as a negation of harshness, so that gentleness may often be rendered as not being harsh to people. So verse 5 could read, "Blessed are those who are not harsh in their treatment of others." It also can be used as an idiomatic phrase, meaning always speaking softly to another or not raising one's voice. To raise one's voice in talking to another generally reflects anger or disrespect. And that is, again, the opposite of what meekness is. To be meek would be to speak to others respectfully and to do so with honor toward them. Meekness has a very practical application in our everyday life and is a quality of character that God is looking for in his children. There's a common thread we see between the first three of these Beatitudes: those who are poor in spirit, those who mourn, those who are meek. All have the connotation of humility. All have the connotation of depending on and looking to God. All have the connotation of concern and respect and care for one another. According to the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia, meekness comes from a Hebrew word that literally means to be oppressed or afflicted. So in this sense, meekness refers to the attitude or the result in a person's life because they have been oppressed or afflicted. They're changed in the way that they think, the way that they view life, because they have experienced difficulties. And because of that, they learn how to treat others and how to show more concern and care for others. Let's look at some examples of humility, meekness, in the way that we use it in our daily lives. Turn to Psalm 37. Psalm 37 is a special one. It is an encouraging psalm that shows us that even though we may be mistreated, disrespected in this world, and that others who are disrespect God seem to get ahead, that God's going to even things out, that those who sin and seem to be profiting from it will someday be taken care of. God will see to that. So it's an encouragement to us not to be discouraged when we see those kinds of things happening. Psalm 37, verse 1 says, "Do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the workers of iniquity." This is something that is likely to occur perhaps in the minds of younger people who compare what they're learning in church to what they're seeing in other people's lives around them. Others seem to be able to live any way they want to and to get away with things and do just fine, while we sometimes struggle while we're obeying God and don't seem to have the same freedom or the same pleasure and joy in life. This is a psalm that David wrote. He said, look, don't let that bother you. Don't fret over what others do. And don't be envious of them, because, verse 2, they shall soon be cut down like the grass and wither as the green herb. Trust in the Eternal and do good. Dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Eternal, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Eternal. Trust also in him, and he will bring it to pass. He shall bring forth your righteousness as the light and your justice as the noonday. Again, people in this world who defy God's law, live in a sinful way, an evil way, seem to have the good things in life oftentimes, and the rest of us might feel left behind. David here is encouraging us to remember to put all this in perspective. Continue to trust in God and do good. Delight yourself in God in obedience to him. Commit your way to God, and he will reward you, verse 6, and make it your way as bright as the noonday sun. Verse 7, rest in the Eternal and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Again, do not fret. It only causes harm. It does no good to become angry or agitated or troubled by what other people are doing, by what and seeming to get away with and seeming to enjoy their life in spite of the way that they live. It doesn't do any good to be angry or to be impatient with God. And there's a lot we might look at in this world today, and it can make us agitated and angry and frustrated with what people are doing, the direction that society is headed. The changes that have taken place in the last few years have just been appalling to us. But David says in this psalm, just be patient. Don't obsess over the temporary discrepancy of those who seem to be doing well in their life compared to those of us who are living carefully according to God's law. Continue in it. Be patient. For evildoers, verse 9, shall be cut off. Those who wait on the Eternal shall inherit the earth. For yet a little while, and the wicked will be no more. Again, rest in God. Be patient in him. Continue to do good. Verse 11, but the meek shall inherit the earth. The meek stand in contrast to those who practice evil. The meek, as we see in this psalm, are patient, faithful, and righteous. They stand firm in God's way of life. And that takes a very special kind of strength, living in an evil and wicked society. There's nothing weak about one who is able to continue to do good and delight in God's way, in spite of what's happening all around us. There's a great reward in being meek and having the strength to stand secure, even in difficult or challenging times. This promise that is made to those who are meek is repeated throughout the psalm. Look at verse 11. We just read, the meek shall inherit the earth. Verse 22, those blessed by him shall inherit the earth. That is those, again, who are the meek, those who are described that we just saw in verse 11. Verse 29, the righteous shall inherit the land. The meek who stand secure and defend God's way are committed to it in spite of what they see happening in society around them. The meek will prevail, and the meek will have a place in God's kingdom and will inherit his promises. As you look through the Old Testament, the Hebrew word that is used here in Psalm 37 is consistently translated in the New King James, it's translated humble. Often when you see the word humble in the New King James, it really could be translated meekness. Those who are meek will enjoy this kind of blessing, and God will will straighten things out in their lives as we continue to hold fast. Turn to Isaiah chapter 29. Isaiah chapter 29. This is a millennial prophecy, as we'll see. We'll begin in verse 17. Verse 17 of Isaiah 29, "Is it not yet a very little while till Lebanon shall be turned into a fruitful field and the fruitful field be esteemed as a forest?" From our perspective, we can look ahead, and this is a kind of a promise to us, that it is it put kind of in a question form, but the point that's being made is that, yes, it is just a little while until these promises of the millennium will come to pass. "In that day," verse 18, "the deaf shall hear the words of the book, and the eyes of the blind shall see out of obscurity and out of darkness." When Jesus Christ rules this earth, truth will become common. People will understand. People who have been blind and deaf and unable to understand will be given understanding. And this applies in the millennium, but also to the white throne judgment. Verse 19, "The humble also shall increase their joy in the eternal." Again, the word humble could be translated meek. The meek will increase their joy in the eternal. "And the poor among the people shall rejoice in the Holy One of Israel." Those who are poor in spirit, those who are poor physically, those who are meek and humble will be rewarded. And that's part of what God promises to his people. So in Psalm 37, we see there is hope in this age. In Isaiah 29, we see the promises of the age to come. But it has to do with being meek, being one who has mild in spirit, but steady and faithful and continuing in it. Let's look at a couple of examples of people who expressed meekness. We'll begin with Moses. Turn back to Numbers chapter 12. Numbers chapter 12. And we'll read the first couple of verses here. Numbers chapter 12. Verse 1 says, "Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman." Now put yourself, in Moses' situation. Here he is facing the challenge of leading the nation of Israel, some obstinate and difficult people to work with. Dedicating himself to helping them and to lead them as God leads him, as they are yet to come for the first time to the promised land of Canaan. In the midst of this stressful job that Moses was given, all of a sudden his sister and his brother turn against him. Suddenly they begin to judge him and to criticize him for the woman that he married. It's not really clear from this verse, the woman, maybe Zipporah, his wife in the first place, or it could be another woman that he married later. But the point is, they were criticizing him for marrying someone outside of the nation of Israel. Very disrespectful and critical of him. And then on top of that, in verse 2, they said, "Has the Eternal indeed spoken only through Moses? Hasn't he spoken through us also?" You know, people tend to see things the way they want to see them. And they thought, you know, we know Moses. He's our brother. We've been with him all of his life. He's not so special. God has worked through us just as much as he's worked through him. Very disrespectful and harmful way to speak of Moses, and we see what happened because of it. But look at what it says in verse 3. "Now the man Moses was very humble, more than all men who are on the face of the earth." Critics look at that verse and they say, isn't that really odd that Moses would write that about himself? After all, he wrote the Pentateuch. And so it seems pretty pretty presumptuous, pretty strange that he would write that about himself, especially here in this context. Moses did write the Pentateuch, but notice that the translators put verse 3 in parentheses. It's most likely that this is a comment that was added at a later date by Ezra as he completed the canon of the Old Testament books. He would add that note regarding Moses. So why would he do that? Why would he make that comment here at this point? Well, look at what happens next. Verse 4, suddenly the Eternal said to Moses and Aaron, come out from the tabernacle of meeting. So the three came out. And the Eternal came down in the pillar of cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle. And he called Aaron and Miriam. That'd be kind of a scary thing, wouldn't it? You, get out here. Stand in front of that tent. I got something to say. And so he said, hear my words. Is there a prophet among you? I, the Eternal, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak to him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in my house. I speak to him face to face, even plainly and not with dark sayings. He sees the form of the Eternal. He said, look, Moses is my man. I work with him in a very special way. In effect, who are you to complain or to make accusations against him? Verse 9, the anger of the Eternal was aroused against them. And then he departed. Again, kind of scary. You know that the Eternal, God, is furious with you, and he tells you these things, and he turns around and walks away. That would leave you pretty shaken. But notice who it was that angry. Did Moses get angry? Did Moses lash back out at his brother and sister? No, it was God who became angry. God defended Moses. Moses was meek. Moses was gentle and quiet. Moses put this into God's hands and waited for him to deal with it. This illustrates that Moses was indeed humble or meek, probably more, as it says here, than anyone else on the face of the earth because of the way God used him and the way he responded to this ridiculous accusation by his sister and brother. And then notice what happened when God punished Miriam and made her leprous. Verse 10, her skin turned as white as snow and she was leprous. Aaron said to Moses, please do not lay this sin on us. He begged Moses for forgiveness. We've done foolishly and we've sinned. Please don't let her remain as one dead. Verse 13, Moses cried out to God saying, please heal her. Oh God, I pray. Again, he was meek. He was concerned about her. He wasn't angry and didn't lash back out at them. He prayed earnestly and sincerely that Miriam would be healed. He definitely expressed very clearly the attitude or the attribute of meekness in his dealings with his sister and brother. Let's look at another example. Turn to Matthew chapter 11. Matthew chapter 11. And we'll drop down and read verse 28. Matthew chapter 11. Verse 28. Jesus is speaking here. He says, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Jesus appealed to those who were in need of strength, in need of help. He said, come to me. If you're weary, if you're carrying heavy burdens, come to me. I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. A yoke is what was used as kind of a harness to guide and to control oxen or livestock. Jesus said, look, I will guide you. I will lead you. and I will not be, I will be gentle with you. Verse 29, I'm gentle and lowly in heart. The word gentle, again, from a Greek word that can be translated meek. And it is translated that way in the King James Version. I am meek, I am gentle, I am lowly in heart, and I will give you rest. Jesus Christ expressed his meekness to those who would come to him, that he would care for them, that he would give them relief, that he would relieve them of their heavy burden. Jesus definitely expressed his meekness as he made this promise. But consider Jesus in contrast to the Pharisees. The Pharisees were supposed to be the religious leaders of the time. They were to teach God's law to his people. They were known, according to Acts 26, verse 5, I'll just refer to that, known to be the strictest sect of the Jewish religion. They were very strict in their application and what they expected of the people that they were supposed to lead. They didn't offer rest and comfort. They were heavy-handed in dealing with the people. The Pharisees were in a position of responsibility, but they misused their authority in the way that they dealt with the people. It says in Matthew 23 that instead of teaching the people about the truth of God, they were actually creating barriers that prevented them from being able to understand and to practice and to benefit from God's way of life. The Pharisees were harsh. The Pharisees were strict. The Pharisees made God's law a burden, and they dominated the people. On top of that, they were very hypocritical. They didn't really live up to it themselves. They just demanded that of the people. So we see this contrast between the meekness of Jesus Christ and the harshness of the Pharisees, who were supposed to be their religious or their spiritual leaders. But have no doubt about it, Jesus was absolutely strict when it came to obedience. He was absolutely strict. He lived according to God's way perfectly every moment of his life. He never compromised. He never sinned. He never gave in. But his attitude toward the people was one of mercy and compassion, gentleness, understanding, forgiving. He was never harsh, even though he was absolutely, again, strict in his obedience. He didn't treat people poorly, badly, as the Pharisees did. So we see that Jesus speaks of meekness in Matthew 5, but Jesus lived a life of meekness. He was indeed a perfect example of one who is meek, powerfully strong in his commitment, in his obedience, and yet gentle and understanding when it came to dealing with other people. One more example, 2 Corinthians chapter 10. We see here something of Paul's approach when he worked with the churches, in particular, the church at Corinth. 2 Corinthians chapter 10. And we'll just read his opening statement here in this particular passage. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 1, says, "Now I, Paul, myself am pleading with you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ." Paul set out to follow the example of Jesus Christ and his meekness and the way he dealt with people. The New Living Translation puts the verse this way: "Now I, Paul, plead with you. I plead with the gentleness and kindness that Christ himself would use. Even though some of you say I'm bold in my letters, but timid in person." So he approached them in a gentle and a kind way, even though they were disrespectful of him. The church at Corinth had its problems. The members did not understand or respect Paul's authority. But Paul was not a weak man. Paul was strong, again, and totally committed in his practice of and his teaching of God's way of life, the law of God. When it came to God, Paul was uncompromising. He would not give in at all to any kind of compromise. He could be strict, he could be very corrective, but his motivation, as we see here in this 2 Corinthians 10, was based on his love and gentle approach and following the example of Jesus Christ. So we've talked about the meaning of the word meekness, and we've seen some examples of meekness in the life of Moses and of Jesus Christ and the Apostle Paul. So now let's bring it home. What does it mean for us to be meek? How do we display that frame of mind, that characteristic in our lives? We'll look at several of the writings in Paul's epistles. Paul wrote frequently about the need to be meek in our relationships within the church. Again, the Greek word translated meek or meekness means a gentleness of attitude and behavior in contrast with the harshness of others. It means gentleness, meekness, and mildness. That's what Paul is urging as he writes in instructions to the church. Let's look at some of the examples of what he wrote and how he implored us to have this quality of meekness as part of our life. Ephesians chapter 1 will begin. I'm sorry, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1. He makes reference to the fact that he wrote this epistle while he was in prison. He says, "I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you were called." Beseeching, again, is a way of coming to kind of beg people to hear him. He wasn't demanding or commanding. He was asking them, begging them, beseeching them to follow through on the calling that they were given. To do so, verse 2, with all lowliness and gentleness, with long-suffering, bearing with one another in love. I'll back up just for a moment. The word gentleness says lowliness and gentleness. You got it. Again, that's meekness. It could also be translated, and it is in the King James Version, gentleness or meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit. Paul illustrates the need for us to treat one another with gentleness, with meekness. And we see the characteristics of one who is meek that are listed here in these verses. With all lowliness, in other words, humility. He wrote in Philippians that we should consider others better than ourselves. We should do nothing based on ambition or trying to get ahead of others, but we respect and show that honor to one another. Gentleness, of course, again mentioned specifically. And the characteristics continue to be long-suffering. If we have this quality of meekness, then we are long-suffering. That means to be patient, means to be understanding of others and not to be judgmental of one another. Bearing with one another in love. To bear with one another means literally to put up with each other, to recognize that there are differences. There are different ways that we're not the same. There are differences of opinion or maybe attitude, but we put up with each other in love. We continue to support one another. Endeavoring, which means to put our full effort into maintaining the spirit of unity. These are qualities that are exhibited by one who is meek. These are the meek. This is the meekness that comes through, and the kind of heart and attitude that those who have that frame of mind, the way they'll treat one another. Let's look at a couple of other of Paul's instructions to us to express this meekness. Turn to 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6. Verse 1, He's talking about relationships that we have. He talked about different kinds of things that where we interact with one another. He makes a special point here in chapter 6, verse 1. Let as many bondservants as are under the yoke count their masters worthy of all honor, so that the name of God and his doctrine is not blasphemed. And those of you who have believing masters, let them not despise them because they're brethren, but rather to serve them because they're benefited as believers. Teach and exhort these things. This is talking about the kind of patience and gentleness that we need to have in our relationships. And he specifically talks about those who have a responsibility to over one another. Going down to the end of later on in this chapter, Paul writes about the temptation to make money the center of life and how that causes harm to a person when you make money to be the most important thing to you. He says in verse 10, the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil that leads people to stray from the faith. So he continues then in verse 11, but you, O man of God, flee those things and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, and gentleness. Again, it's a choice that we make. We, rather than seeking the physical benefits of wealth and trying to make ourselves rich in a physical way, instead we run away from those things, we flee those things, and instead we pursue spiritual qualities, as we see including verse 11, including gentleness, which is, again, another translation of the word that is translated in Matthew 5 as meek. Meekness we show meekness in our relationships by our care, our respect, our gentleness with one another. Titus chapter 3. Titus chapter 3, verse 1. Speaking here, directing Titus in how he should work with the church, it says, remind them to be subject to rulers and authorities, to obey, to be ready for every good work, to speak evil of no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing all humility to all men. You know, we're not part of the society that we live in. We're told to be separate from them, but we live in this society. We're not part of the standards of the society or the way that it works. But we are to be living in a peaceable and gentle way within that society. He says in verse 2, to speak evil of no one, this is from the King James Version, speak evil of no man, to be not brawlers, but gentle, showing all meekness unto all men. So how we interact with others who are outside of the church, we saw that we should be treating one another with meekness, with care, with respect, with gentleness. But we also, Paul is writing, are to be showing that kind of treatment or humility and gentleness to all men. How we interact with others is important. The impression we give them of who we are, of what we are, of what we stand for, is very important. We're to be a light to other people. And the way we treat them with meekness, with gentleness, with understanding, with patience, certainly is a way of portraying what God would have us express in our relationships. Philippians chapter 2, verse 15. Philippians chapter 2, verse 15. Tells us to live, do all things without complaining, without disputing, without arguing among ourselves. Verse 15, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God, without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. The way that we live, the meekness that we portray, which again is a form of strength and standing up for and continuing in God's way, it's a matter of being gentle and careful in the way that we work with other people. This is all part of the way that we are to express and learn the quality of gentleness, of meekness. Meekness makes you different from the way others would treat you and the way that others would treat each other. Meekness is a powerful example and force in our lives. Paul wrote, again, so many instructions, or it's repeated in his instructions so many times, the importance of having that quality of meekness. Go to Colossians chapter 3. Colossians, the third chapter. This is a whole passage about the putting off an old way of life and putting on a new way of life, putting off the old man, as he puts it, and putting on the new man. We'll just pick it up here in Colossians 3, verse 8. Colossians chapter 3, verse 8. It says, now you yourselves are to put off all these. This is what we put out of our lives. This is what we rid ourselves of. Anger, wrath, malice. Those three certainly have to do with being harsh, of mistreating others, of treating them improperly and without respect. Discontinue that kind of activity. Put those off. See, those, again, are the opposite of meekness. Put off anger, wrath, malice, as well as blasphemy and filthy language out of your mouth. Rid yourself of those kinds of behaviors. The expositor's commentary says that meekness toward others implies freedom from malice and a vengeful spirit. Again, meekness is all about being mild, patient, gentle, and forgiving. Certainly not weaknesses. It takes great strength to treat others in that way, to have that kind of care for them and to express it in the way that we interact with them. Verse 12. Therefore, as the elect of God, holy, beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering. Of course, to put on means to literally to clothe yourself with, to wrap yourselves in this kind of a heart and attitude. It's something we put on instead of put off. These are qualities that we are to achieve in our lives that are to be, that give us, again, including meekness, the kind of people that God is looking for to be part of his family. Meekness, turns out, is really very much a part of our temperament, of our personality, of the way that we live each and every day, each and every interaction with other people is based on this foundation of respect, of forgiveness, of patience, that builds and puts together this package or this quality of meekness in our lives. And we're talking about how we treat others in the church, how we relate to them. We're talking about how we relate to those outside of the church, the example we show by the way that we deal with others. But another place where this becomes very important is within our families. Where else is it more important to have patience, to be kind, to be thoughtful, to be forgiving, to have these expressions or these qualities of meekness? In our marriages, in our dealings with our children, meekness is incredibly important, very basic. It establishes our connection to other people. Anger is one of the most basic ways to contradict meekness. Anger can cause a lot of harm if we treat other people in a wrong way. Now, anger is a whole different subject. There are ways that anger is good and is necessary. But in our relationships with one another, Paul here makes it clear to put off anger and wrath and malice, to never practice those things. And in our most important connections and relationships with our spouses, with our children, meekness is a basic quality that will make our that will give us much more success in our relationship, and to be harsh and instead can cause a lot of harm in our dealings with one another. Let's consider back to the book of Galatians, chapter 5. There's a list here that you're most familiar with, that you have read many, many times, and you know that this is a very basic and important part of our life. Galatians 5, verses 22 and 23, list the fruit of God's Spirit. We know that these are qualities that we can have when we grow when we exercise God's Holy Spirit. We nurture these kinds of characteristics and qualities into our life. The lists are a little bit different if you read the King James and the New King James, but meekness is part of that list in both of those different translations. Look at what it says here in the New King James, Galatians 5. Let's just review the list quickly. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace. You know, when we get past those first three, then maybe we kind of begin to look at the rest of it, of this list, almost like it's a Boy Scouts motto. You know, it says love, joy, and peace, but then there comes these other qualities that maybe we don't give a lot of consideration to, that these also are part of the expression of God's character and Spirit in our lives. Long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, gentleness, meekness, translated meekness in other translations. And the Greek word means, or could be translated, meekness. These are qualities that are just as important as love, joy, and peace. And we can consider how we can develop these particular qualities as well in our lives. Gentleness is a key characteristic or quality that we develop with God's Holy Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit in the King James translation in this verse says the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, and meekness. Where the New King James says gentleness. Again, each of these is a basic quality or characteristic of God that we are to develop in our lives. And when you put them all together, it becomes the fruit, the evidence, the characteristic of God's Spirit working in our lives. So meekness is so fundamental to our life. When Jesus said, "Blessed are the meek," it wasn't something that's just simple or to be taken in a superficial way. It reaches very deep into our character, the way that we live our life each day, the way we treat people. It's very challenging to always be patient, to always be gentle, to always exercise that strength in our lives. And we see, and we notice as we began, that meekness also includes a strong commitment to God's way, to be committed to Him, to not compromise in the face of the challenges that this society presents to us. So we've seen what meekness is, what it means in the different languages that are translated into our Bibles. We've seen examples of people who have expressed that meekness and show us the way that we can apply it in our lives. And we've seen instruction from the Apostle Paul and how we need to develop that quality and how it affects us in every aspect of our life. Meekness is an everyday, foundational quality of God's character. And as we grow in that characteristic, that quality of meekness, we enhance our own lives, we improve the quality of our lives, and we grow in our relationships with, and we enhance the relationships we have with others as well. As we do this, then we develop a very important quality of character that God is looking for in his children. As Jesus said, "Blessed are the meek. They shall inherit the earth. They shall inherit God's promises in God's kingdom." Meekness is an important aspect of the life that we are to live as God's people.